into the CHGO White Sox podcast, coming to you live from Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me, the full CHGO White Sox crew. That is Vinny Duber. Follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Eckerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. We are produced today by Sarah.
Hi.
Have you enjoyed your 3 hours here?
Yes.
All right. Hit the thumbs up button and feel free to subscribe. We are getting closer to March 4th. It's March 1st, if you haven't looked at a calendar, which means we're getting closer to our three-year anniversary, right?
Two.
Maybe two?
Yeah, it would be. We started in 2022. It has been two years. 2 years since
we'll start our third year. Mm.
So that's all right. That's confusing. But it's our third time working.
Fun with math.
Third time working on March 4th.
That is correct.
But it's our second year anniversary.
It's like your birthday. You don't count that first one usually, even though you should. See how it goes?
I know I really didn't. Hit the subscribe button is the whole point of this. We are getting closer to 50,000 subscribers.
Yeah, I have had 46 birthdays. I'm only 45 years old. The birthday doesn't count as one of your actual days.
Think about it this way for more confusion. Mm-hmm. The first year of your life ends with your first birthday.
Okay. On today's show,
your brain.
Yes. On today's show, I've watched 3 hours of spring training baseball. My mind is mush. All these guys with nameless jerseys. I mean, that's what the real people should be really mad at Fanatics for that. Can we just get names on the back of those? Like, some of these jerseys don't even have names.
You know what's just really funny is that you know who's escaping this criticism altogether? The Yankees. They figured it out. They're playing that long game.
Their road jerseys have it, though, right?
No. That's the Red Sox.
Yeah, Red Sox, home, none. Okay. Road, yes. But Yankees are nothing on either.
Hey, and we saw Justin Steele's beard today, and I said the Yankees have it right. Not everyone should have a beard. Justin Steele should shave that. I get he's from the Bayou, you creature, opening day, or what do you say?
I don't think the Bayou's in Alabama.
Oh, okay. My bad. I'll go a little bit.
Bayou's
I'll go
further west.
Yeah. A little west and south. How is he saying opening day, though? You were having fun with that.
Like someone from Alabama would.
How would that happen?
Open day.
Thank you, Herb.
Similar to that.
Playing along. Anyways.
I'm not going to have the state of Alabama coming after me.
But isn't he from Louisiana?
I mean, he might be, but I know he went to Alabama schools.
He's from, Loosedale, Mississippi. Can you do a Mississippi accent?
Same thing.
Okay, all right.
Get rid of all those states down there, except for Louisiana. And then,
he went from high school into college, I think.
That's how many people do.
High school into the pros. Okay. I'm really dumb. I don't know how birthdays work. Anyways, let's maybe get into some pre-tape stuff. We got Max Stassi being interviewed by Vinny Duber. He's had 5 total interviews, right? We've aired 4, but this is the 5th.
It is.
That's how that works?
That's how it works.
We had Michael Kopech on Monday, Pedro Grifol on Tuesday. Let's see if I can do this. Ooh, buddy. We had Paul DeJong on Wednesday, Eric Fetty on Thursday. We'll have Max Stassi today. Then we'll talk about today's spring training game, stuff that we noticed. Michael Kopech pitched 2 innings, I think 40 plus pitches. I'll add up the total and get that to you. But he had 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, and a hit by pitch. So it was a typical Michael Kopech outing. We'll give you the full breakdown on that. And then Herb wants to chat about Aloy Jimenez's stance because we probably have seen this before. This isn't the first game being broadcasted, but it's at least the first time for us noticing it,
yeah,
I guess.
It was.
So we'll talk about how Aloy's stance changes might help him. And then finally, Gavin Sheets or Mike Moustakas. Man, it feels like a monster truck battle. We'll talk some position battles later on.
You're not going to do the whole segment in the monster truck ad read voice, are you?
I could.
We don't have any anymore, right? Because Friday, there's a monster truck thing tonight.
But they're also on Saturday, and Sunday.
That is a good point.
Guys, show starts, I think, at like 7. So
the monster truck show?
I think there's still time to go have some family fun on a Friday.
Monster Mutt the Dalmatian or whatever it is.
It's not that.
Okay.
All right. Well, anyways, let's get into your chat with Max Stassi. Let's go talk to the White Sox new catcher. Here's Vin and Max. Video files not found.
No,
what do we do? Oh, no. Sarah,
we'll have to talk
have
about
to
something
us.
Else.
Okay. Max Stassi pretty much erased it. He's like, it was a good conversation with Vinny, but I want people to be talking about my future where Herb's trying to tell me that I'm going to take a leap this year.
Yeah, I mean, how?
There he is.
He's, oh, yeah.
What, that hair.
I'm now remembering why I picked this for Friday.
Why? Because we have the lower
hair?
Viewers?
Huh? The hair?
Well, you know, people go out on a Friday night. Maybe they're looking to listen to the podcast tomorrow rather than watch it live. And that might be good for some folks to not see what my hair looks like in this interview. But the people who are watching, you're going to get a real treat.
Okay, there we go. Thank you, Sarah, for being ready to tap dance. Anyways, we appreciate everyone for hanging out with us. Make sure you hit that thumbs up button. We really appreciate Chicago Cubs shortstop saying White Sox suck. God bless you. Mwah. Have fun winning a spring training game. Here's Max Stassi and Vinny Duber.
All right, Max, new team this year for you, new camp. What's it been like getting to know the White Sox here?
It's been awesome. You know, I'm very happy to be over here. I think it's going to be an exciting year for us. And, you know, we got a good mix of veteran guys, some younger guys, and excited to get going.
You've obviously been here for a while as a catcher, getting to know the pitching staff. What has it been like? What's the process of getting to know a new pitching staff?
Yeah, it's just doing the homework, you know, knowing what they like, what they don't like, you know, how to set up behind the dish for them and just get to know them on a personal level. It takes some time, but, you know, each and every day getting to know the guys a little better.
What's the general feeling of this camp so far? Obviously, we've heard so much from Pedro about kind of the message that he's putting forth, the style of play that he wants to see from you guys. What have you kind of heard from the manager?
Yeah, you know, he just wants us to be aggressive, you know, be aggressive on the bases, be aggressive in every facet of the game. So it's, like I said, it's exciting and ready to get going.
When you hear 0.0% chance to make the playoffs, what does that hit you as?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter to us in the room. You know, that's we control our own destiny, and that's the outside speaking. So, we don't believe that, but we take it just one day at a time.
It certainly seems like Chris Getz in the front office put an emphasis this offseason on bringing in guys who have experience in organizations that have had success. Obviously, Houston is one of those where you were a part of. What can you kind of take from your time with the Astros to kind of apply to what the White Sox are trying to build here?
Yeah, I've been around a lot of good players, you know, in Houston and Anaheim and saw how they went about their business. And, you know, I caught some really good pitchers, too. So I'm excited to share my knowledge from, you know, stuff that I learned from them and just my experiences over the years. You know, it's my 15th spring training. Goes by fast, and I'm excited to work with these guys.
One of those guys that you worked with in Houston is Martin Maldonado, who's catching with you again here. What's it like to be reunited with him?
It's awesome. You know, Maldi he's incredible. You know, behind the scenes, the work that he puts in, seeing him behind the dish, it's pretty special. So it's awesome to be back with him and excited to work with him this season.
We've heard from opposing players, I think, during playoff runs in the past that he was a part of that, you know, really the reason that those pitching staffs in Houston were able to have so much success had a lot to do with him. What is it that he brings to a game every day or that brings to a pitching staff in general that helps them have so much success?
I would say, like I said earlier, it's his number one is his experience, his preparation, his focus during the game. And he works really well with each guy. He does his homework, and I think that's a few things that makes him who he is.
You had a chance to catch Michael Kopech, I think, earlier today in live batting practice. What do you see from this guy?
Yeah, I see obviously an explosive fastball, and you know he's working on his secondaries too, and you know he looks good. You know he's healthy, he's ready to go, and expecting big things out of him this season.
How about Dylan Cease? Obviously, he's been the talk of the offseason for one reason or another. But, this is a guy who just 2 years ago finished really high in the Cy Young, you know, race in the vote. What have you seen from him maybe as an opposing hitter? And then what are you seeing from him this camp?
Yeah, I mean, it's as advertised. You know, I caught his bullpen yesterday, and I don't think he missed a spot. You know, he was working all of his pitches in the zone. Yeah, he's ready for a big season, and I expect nothing but less from him.
What has it been like, you know, obviously you're catching these guys, but when these pitchers are working with Brian Bannister, who's new to this organization, what have you noticed from him? It seems like from our vantage point, he's really coaching the guys up and really going in depth. What have you seen from him?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Bannister coming over, he's got a track record. You know, he started out in Boston. They won the World Series there. He went to San Francisco, changed some things up in the pitching department, had some success there. I expect the same here, you know, with his knowledge and his ability to work with each and every guy. It's pretty fun to watch.
Obviously, you're on to the White Sox now, but I think I'd be remiss to ask you, what's it like to catch Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, he's got just about every pitch in the book, but the thing with Shohei is his preparation and focus. And I mean, with him doing both, you know, it's such a high level. It's incredible to watch him hit and pitch, and I mean, shoot, even run the bases too.
When you look at yourself this year, what are you kind of expecting for what you're able to contribute to this team, you know, maybe from an offensive standpoint, maybe from a defensive standpoint, which obviously was a big emphasis of the front office this winter?
Yeah, I honestly try not to have any expectations. I try to take each and every day, approach it each and every day the same and just go out there and have fun. I think the big thing for me is just being on the field and being there for my teammates.
What's this clubhouse like? What are those teammates like? I think we've been in there a few times now, and it seems like a lot of talking going on, a lot of energy in there. What do you make of this group of guys?
Oh, they're incredible. I think that the front office put emphasis on, you know, bringing in guys that are good in the clubhouse, and you know, it's a lot of fun. We're all gelling pretty well together, and yeah, it's just like I said, it's fun to be a part of.
We're hearing from a lot of your teammates that, you know, you guys are going out to try to surprise some people this year. Is there a little bit of that chip on the shoulder, a little bit of that, hey, let's show you what we can do?
Absolutely. Why not? You know, go out there and see what we can do. You know, we show up each and every day to win, and hopefully we'll do just that.
All right. Max Stassi, thanks for the time.
That is Max Stassi, the guy that Herb thinks is going to take a leap here before we hit the break here. Anything stick out from the Max Stassi interview?
Just a very enjoyable experience for all the folks listening to the audio only version on podcast. I can't compliment the audio experience enough.
Any specific?
That hair was horrible.
Oh, okay.
It looked terrible.
You know, like I know everybody's their toughest critic. As I watched that, I saw a couple of hairs out of place, but you're outside in the breeze.
I got to be honest. Sarah and I, you know, I asked Sarah, like, hey, yeah. Are you busy? She's like, no, I'm only doing this show. Like, I was like, can you edit the Max Stassi interview? And then I was like, she was like, which one is that? And then I was like, oh, it's this one. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was Vinny's bad hair day.
Yeah.
I got to be honest. We talked about it. That's, yeah. It was
kind of I didn't bring all of my hair stuff to Arizona. And so I took my time in acquiring it, and I had to go out to dinner that evening without a hat, and so yeah, it didn't work out.
It's okay. It looking fresh now. Don't worry.
Thank you.
We can burn that video if you want, but it will be posted later at 6:30 on our CHGO YouTube channel. And hey, Matthew Cortese saying you look like a rock star. I think someone was asking who the rock star on your shirt was. It was Tom Petty.
It was.
So there you go. You're you know, damn those torpedoes and damn that hair gel. You know, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Anyways, let's take a break, and we'll let you know about our friends over at Leinenkugel. I think you were just going to read the can today, Vinny, was your idea, and tell people about, was it Rose Leinenkugel?
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense, because that's the
matriarch
company
name.
And then we'll jump into some Michael Kopech and Aloy Jimenez talk.
So I'm going, I've got the green light for the Lineys read?
You got the green light for the Lineys read.
Guys, when you hear the phrase, Wisconsin innovation, some things might come to mind. Perhaps the cheese curd. Perhaps indoor water parks.
People owning their own NFL team.
That's another thing. Perhaps Summerfest. They say, hey, we've got this big giant piece of concrete on the front of the lake. What are we going to do with it? Put a bunch of concerts there at the same time. But you know what comes to my mind? The delicious beers made by the Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company out of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Guys, they're sponsoring us now, and it's fantastic because it means that we get to sit here and drink these delectable beers on air, whether it's the Sunset Wheat that I'm enjoying currently or the Lakeside Cherry that Herb is enjoying currently, or you can go down to the Jewels and get yourself some Honey Vice, I bet. But I know what everybody's waiting for. They're waiting for summer. They're waiting for the temperatures to get to the exact perfect, scientifically proven spot where summer shandy tastes its most delicious. That's why it's a seasonal beer, folks. But get ready for that, obviously. Usually shandy season starts kind of early. I bet maybe this month, maybe next month, you'd be finding summer shandy in your Jewels. So you got to go ahead and get it, because what other beer are you going to drink while you're sitting by the lake or while you're out at the Sox game, because as you know, Leinenkugel's is the official craft beer of the Chicago White Sox. Or maybe you're going all the way up to northern Wisconsin. You're going to be paddling around on a lake in some canoe. You're going to want a hearty a hearty sample of summer shandy. You're going to want a whole full cooler of it because you go through it quickly. It's just that good. Here's the part that I have to read verbatim. Flavor life's simple moments with Leinenkugel's, the official craft beer of the Chicago White Sox. Get yourself to Leine.com/CHGO to find delivery options near you. That's Leine.com/CHGO. Or pick up Leinenkugel's pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Leinenkugel's, flavor the moment. Celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company. Chippewa Falls? Yes.
Do you talk about Wisconsin innovation in that ad?
I did.
Do you know it's an innovation of the great state of Florida?
Shows where guys wrestle alligators.
Monster Jam. Enjoy big time family fun at Monster Jam, where the world's best drivers and their 12,000 pound monster trucks tear up the dirt in wide open competitions of speed and skill. You'll be on the edge of your seat as you witness all out racing, massive stunts, big air and backflips. Monster Place is the only place to see the legendary Grave Digger, Megalodon, El Toro Loco, and Vinny favorite monster mutt Dalmatian. It's the most heart-pounding monster truck event, an experience you won't forget. Nothing else compares. Unscripted, unforgettable, unexpected. Monster Jam, as big as it gets. See world-class athletes in action performing the craziest stunts in motorsports. This is Monster Jam. See it live at the Allstate Arena March 1st, 2nd, 3rd, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, this weekend. Be there, be there, be there.
Link for tickets is in the description. And that is at 6 p.m. Doors open at 6 p.m., so be there.
There's probably people watching this show
driving
while sitting in the Allstate Arena waiting right now.
You know, waiting to pay to get in that parking. Maybe parking's free. I don't know. I didn't look into this.
They're probably just like, Monster Mutt Dalmatian. Monster Mutt Dalmatian.
They all have hoodies. They're, you know, the top has the little ears on it, too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's cute.
And William, I do appreciate that I sound like Randy Savage, but I'm also not doing my actual Randy Savage because, like, ooh, yeah. No, I can't do it. Okay, never mind.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
Ooh, no.
It's not there?
Yeah.
You gotta like get a like a.
I guess I've just been too Monster thing. Jammy.
Yeah.
Cream always rises to the top. Ooh, yeah.
There it is. You're getting there.
All right.
That's better.
Okay. Yeah, I had to do the cream crop. Okay. Let's talk about today's spring training game. Sarah worked very hard on the graphic that says the White Sox lost 10-6 to the Cubs out in Mesa, Arizona. Sunny Mesa, Arizona.
Ooh, hey. I gotta be honest. I don't think I would ever say, other than this very specific situation, I'm glad I'm not in Mesa, Arizona, because as you can see outside, it's a cloudy, dreary day here in Chicago. Looked lovely out in Arizona for doing anything other than trying to catch a fly ball.
Oh, also, too, like, you came back, and then the next day, was it that tornado day? Basically.
That was here?
Yeah.
That was Tuesday. Yeah, that was Tuesday.
Okay,
yeah.
So welcome back, you know?
Thanks. Like,
you
know, tornadoes and clouds.
Sunny, almost unbearably sunny Mesa, Arizona, or, you know,
regular
hell
Chicago.
In a week. Anyways.
It's 78 degrees in Mesa, Arizona, by the way.
So that sounds nice.
Ugh, 78 early. And real sunny.
Way too much.
You're complaining about a 78 and sunny day?
Yes. Perfect day is 65.
You stop.
100%. You know how much I sweat. 78, man, I'll be like melted. Ooh, sorry. Melting. Sorry, people who are listening on the radio.
You didn't melt this winter. This is the warmest winter since.
Anyone ever. Know?
Sunday, since, Sunday, Sunday?
No, no. Since 1987.
I heard 1932.
I'm totally guessing. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't. That you gave a really convicted answer there. I believe Sarah in 1987. No, 1932.
Oof.
I mean, that's yikes. Anyways, what were we talking about? Oh, sunny Mesa, Arizona, yeah, and yeah. Pete Crow Armstrong being horrible at baseball.
I mean, and Matt Hurwitz. Lot of other people too. Yeah.
I mean, thankfully the Sox weren't doing it. I didn't see any Sox dealing.
They got better shades, I guess.
Maybe the Cubs couldn't hit the ball in the air. Anyways, let's jump into Michael Kopech. We can work. Actually, I guess Aloy was first because Aloy hit in the first inning. So why don't we go to Aloy? Then we'll get to Michael Kopech. Okay. Aloy Jimenez, we think we noticed a stance change from Aloy. Aloy has obviously always had a very odd leg stance, has been very pronounced. He always had a very upright bat. Sarah, if you have that graphic, feel free to flash it. But what we noticed was the Aloy, the Twitter, yeah, thank you, the Twitter screenshot. what we noticed is his arm seemed to be a little bit more away from his body. You can see it's very tight to his body. His elbow is raised and more pointed towards the plate rather than straight down, pointed towards his back foot. And you can also see that leg movement. While it is still there, it does seem to be a little lessened. It seems to be a little bit more straight, a little bit less of like a sharp bend there in that front leg. You can kind of see it's more of a curved leg, his front leg, than a pointy, and his back seems to be a little bit more arched. You feeling like he's more hitterish now? Is that, can we be baseball and be cool and say he's looking hittery?
I'm just trying to figure out, you know, this is just a hypothesis of why you would do that. And the reason why I would think is probably because where Aloy's hands last year were kind of low mid body and probably at the chest, where if you got to hit a high fastball that's above your hands, you got to get there anyways. You got to get there up there to hit that pitch anyways. Now just start your hands there, and you can. It's better to adjust down than just back up. And so getting your hands, and it looks like his left elbow, his lead elbow is up too, so he can probably get to balls and clear out balls that are inside of him a little bit easier that way. So, yeah, it's a good thing because, I mean, in spring training, he's hitting, what, about 500 right now? So it's just spring training. But somebody was saying, well, his problem's never been his hitting. Last year, his hitting was kind of a problem. It was just kind of mediocre. I think he was a 104 weighted runs created plus. And so that's just 4 points above the average hitter. Not just the average designated hitter. For a designated hitter, that's piss poor. So I think that he wants to generate more power, firstly, because people probably have been getting a tell on him, and getting his hands up allows him to get to that ball a little quicker at his high fastball. And so it looked like he got a high fastball today from
Assad?
Assad, yeah, and he got to it, but it broke his bat and then dumped it right over the shortstop's head. So if that's working, if that's what the point is, I'm all for it.
It's funny. We talked to Aloy in the early days of spring training, and certainly it stands out to everybody that this is a power hitter who is having so much trouble getting the ball in the air for the better part of the second half last season. And so we talked to him at the beginning of spring training and said, well, hey, what are you working on? What are you doing to fix that, to hit more fly balls? And he basically refused to tell us and said it was a secret, and we'll see if it works kind of thing. I don't know if this is what he was referring to, but I would have to imagine that everything that was done from the White Sox standpoint this year in terms of tweaking anything that he was doing with the bat was to achieve that goal of him getting the ball in the air a lot more. I mean, guys, we sat here and watched how many games where, you know, it wasn't necessarily that he wasn't hitting the ball hard. Yep. Mm-hmm. He was just hitting it right into the ground all the time, you know, right at defenders on the infield. If you go play the old MVP 2005 game, you're hitting it right at the big wood panel, right? When you're playing the mini game there, it wasn't working out for him. And so there was changes that needed to be made this offseason, changes that needed to be made this spring. We're going to see once the games start counting how effective those changes end up being. But if this is one of those changes, we can at least point to why it was made. Even if we don't necessarily know if there are perhaps other things, probably there are, that went into it as well.
You brought it up, so I have to depart from the Aloy Jimenez thing just for a second. But you brought up earlier that Royce Lewis hit another grand slam. And Russ Dorsey tweeted out, Royce Lewis definitely uses the auto home run cheat code from MVP baseball when he sees the bases loaded. He can't stop hitting grand slams. So, it's at everyone's brain, and they should bring it back. But anyways, the Aloy stuff, it just seemed just more repeatable. It seems more fluid, and hopefully it would just lead to him being more out in front on those fastballs. And he was able to handle a slider too. And you'd rather see him, if he gets a fat slider from Javier Assad, you'd rather see him hit it, you know, 340 feet foul down the left field line and pulling these balls rather than, again, you know, just maybe having weak contact or, again, just not making the right contact. It does seem like he's in more of a power stance. I know we've said this before. I think we said it in 2022 when we were doing shows on March 4th and waiting for the lockout to end. I think we were saying it in 2023. I am going to say it now because I think we have conviction that he won't play the field at all. Knock on wood.
He will not.
He will hit 40 homers. He's got a big, I mean, it's not
I'm
a not contract year.
I like it. I like what you're going.
It's kind of a contract year. It's not a contract year.
It could be a contract year.
Could be a contract year. I don't know. He just seemed really relaxed when he was talking to you guys. You know, he was, I think, messing with Merck, right? Like, Merck forgot his name. Just reminding Merck who he was. Like, I don't know. He just seemed confident. If he's healthy, he's confident. He's made changes that will just help him be just more repeatable.
No appendix to burst this year.
Hope, right. There you go. I think he'll hit 40. I don't know. I don't think it's crazy, but it's just.
Not at all.
I would like him to do it.
He did it one time in his rookie year, and I think if you extrapolate him being healthy, that would be a natural 40 home runs, too. Easily hit 40.
Fingers crossed. All right. Let's take a break, and then we'll get into some Michael Kopech stuff. Herb's going to let you know about game time. If you do want to go see Eloy Jimenez's change stance in person, he'll tell you how to get a code to make sure that it's even a nicer deal for you. I'll let you know about Prize Picks.
At Game Time, they believe that you shouldn't be worried about when you're buying tickets to your next big event. That's why Game Time has a fast and easy way to buy tickets for all the sports, music, comedy, theater events that are near you. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their best price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. My situation, I bought some tickets in Atlanta to see the Braves play, went to a secondary site other than Game Time to see if they had cheaper tickets, and one did. So I sent this information to Game Time, and within 12 minutes of that email, they sent 110% of the difference to my Game Time account. You could see the views from your seat before you buy, so you know exactly where you're expected to sit when you arrive. And all-in prices show the total up front, so you know what you're getting without the hidden fees. Game Time has deals right up to the start of the event and even an hour after the event start. It's the place to go to find last-minute seats. Going up to Milwaukee later in April, I was thinking about buying tickets to the Brewers-Yankees, but I said, I'm going to wait until the game starts so I can go and buy them at Game Time so I can get the best seats and the best price available. And with zone deals, you pick the section, Game Time picks the seats for an average savings of 18%. And at Game Time Guarantee, that means that you'll always get the best price. You find tickets in the same section or row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CHGO for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code CHGO for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed.
Thanks, Herb. Price Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They are the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. The Bulls play at 9 p.m. tonight.
Oh my.
At home?
At home.
Why?
CHGO Bulls, it has a post-game show, I believe, at 10:30 or 11, something like that tonight.
They'll probably finish at midnight. Nuggets? The Bucks.
At home? Oh, my goodness.
Why?
I don't know. Probably ESPN.
You can go on Game Time and get tickets. There's like, $45 ones right now?
There you go. You can go to Game Time.
And you have a lot of time to do it.
Yeah.
You know what you can do on Price Picks?
What?
You can pick how fast people are going to be doing the 40-yard dash.
Oh, you go more than a lesson?
Yeah.
There you go.
I got him already.
Look at you. Oh, and you already picked him. So you got Brock Bowers to hit.
Brock Bowers going sub 4.5 40.
Football season may be over, but you could bet on the combine. But the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season, fight for playoff home court, the NFL combine, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Conference tournaments are here, too, which means the biggest moments in college basketball are getting closer. Be a part of the action on Prize Picks for both men's and women's college basketball. And if you are showing up to the Bulls game today, you're sitting down in your seats. Prize Picks is really simple to play. You can make your picks and submit your entry in less than 60 seconds. So if you're really feeling it, maybe you look at the starting lineup and you're like, oh, I like that matchup. You can go pick a more than or less than on a certain guy's stat projection. So go to prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right. Michael Kopech. Herb, what'd you make of the start today?
I thought you got the same first inning struggles. I mean, with the magical bat who led off, you see the brilliance that he has, like the curve or slider or cutter that he's throwing, it's crisp. And then through that whole first inning, you could see he got people down to two strikes, and then he's searching. And there's a couple non-competitive pitches in that first inning. So he eventually he gets out of it because he's Michael Kopech. He has filthy stuff. I think he hits a batter, Nick Madrigal, to start it, walks a batter, and then strikes out the side, you know, before pretty much going 3-2 with the first three batters. So you get the Michael Kopech experience in that first inning. No runs scored. And then the second inning, I think he came out, and yes, they're a fewer, they're lesser hitters. So I think it was the 5, 6, 7, and 8 hitters. So he looked like he was more attacking these guys instead of he had the feel in that second inning. It might have been just simple as that. And fewer, less competitive pitches and just going after these guys with fastballs. And then there was one batter, I think it was the last batter he faced, where he struck him out twice with a filthy cutter or slider at the bottom of the zone that the ump didn't call, and then he just doubled up on that and just get a fastball right down the pipe and was like, get your ass out of there. I was like, all right, there's the Michael Kopech that needs to be showing up every single inning. It seemed like he was in attack mode that second inning. The first inning, he was more passive, and he didn't find the feel of his slider and or fastball, but that's the experience. I mean, I don't know how you fix the first innings for Michael Kopech because it's been going on for a minute now, but the result was good this year. He found a way to get out of that first inning without any damage done.
I mean, listen, this is only a two-inning outing, your first outing of the spring, but I think White Sox fans, and certainly me from someone who's just interested standpoint, want to see that kind of, you know, in-game struggles happen to a degree with Michael Kopech this spring because you want to see how he responds to it. And so more so than hearing the results and hearing what he did, you know, walked X number of guys, struck out X number of guys, I want to hear from him about what he was thinking in the moment, right? Because so much last year, we certainly saw the fact that struggles were getting to him and that he was visibly frustrated on the mound, and it seemed to compound the problems that he was having. And then not only that, we heard that that is what was happening from both him, Pedro Grifol, and others. So to be able to see whether he has worked on that to an effective degree this offseason, since the end of last year, you gotta give him moments that are going to generate those kinds of reactions that he had last year and see and make sure that that's not going to be a continuous problem. If he's going to continue to walk guys, that's going to be a problem. You don't want walks, right? But Dylan Cease almost won the Cy Young, leading the American League in walks, because on the mound, he is unaffected by those, and he is able to get out of it. Michael Kopech was not last year. And so if he can maybe find a solve for those, for that side of the issues that he was going through, maybe the walks don't end up biting him quite as hard because he's able to do what he did today, which was two guys on base, I don't care, I'm going to strike out the next three, right? And so that, to me, is the most important thing of Michael Kopech's spring training. I asked Pedro in the interview that I had with him that we played on Tuesday about that, about Michael Kopech's work on the mental side of the game, the emotional side of the game. Pedro said he looked like, in that regard, he showed up to camp looking like a totally different guy. So if that's the case, then a first inning like today is not a, as we described it in the title, an up and down situation. It's not a dangerous situation for him and for the White Sox to be in. It is a success because he didn't give up any runs. He put two guys on base, but he dialed back in and struck out the next three guys. If that is the response to the kind of things that he did way too often last year, and maybe will continue to do to some extent, then that, to me, is a problem that is very much solved versus what we saw over and over again last year.
And he spoke to the media after the game, and Chuck posted it, and I think you used the word unravel. What did you use? Or not letting the problem compound. And that was really the first thing that he said. I think he used unravel or something like that. And he didn't let it unravel to that point. The issue, though, is when he says his goal is to, you know, throw 180 innings, it's just you can't have, I think, four full counts and then 45 pitches through the first two innings. So there were definitely some positives. There were definitely some negatives. It really felt like a true Michael Kopech start. And the first batter, Kevin mentions, yep, if you throw a bad pitch, be willing to move on, which I think he did, but it definitely took him two batters to get there. And the first one to Madrigal, the first pitch is a fastball up and in. and that's an arm side miss. And Brian Bannister, I think, mentioned to you guys about, you know, when Kopech is locked in, he won't be missing up and in and missing to that arm side. And then you could kind of see him immediately get into his head, and then he misses that one up and in, and then he misses the second one just up and right down the middle, and then the third one is up and on the outside part of the plate. So it just feels like he's trying to overcorrect in those first three pitches on the result that he just got, and not trying to just get rid of that pitch and lock back in. And then he tried to get, you know, lock back in. He hits a fastball low at the knees, and then he debuts his cutter, and it's a nice pitch that breaks back over the inside part of the plate, gets called for a strike, and then he's like, oh, I liked how that looked. Let's try it again. And then he hits Madrigal in the mouth. So that one was tough. And then the Suzuki one was tough, too. He gets into another full count. He had another fastball up and in that missed arm side, and it was after he gets into a 1-2 count, and then he tried to pick off Madrigal, and then he stepped off. So he had two parts where he really didn't get the chance to deliver that pitch, and then he missed, again, what he's been struggling with up and in on that fastball. And then he had a really good at bat against Michael Busch, ended it on a curveball or a sweeper. It was pretty nasty.
Was that the one that was high? Looked a little
No, it was low. Okay. It was a pitch that was low. I think it was a curveball or a slider. I don't really know. Just we didn't have Statcast, so I really can't get the true vibe of it. It had more of a vertical drop. But Busch almost gets a check swing, and that would have been a strikeout. And then he's like, not really bothered by it, throws that backdoor cutter again, gets a called strike, and that's the first strike out there. And then the fourth batter to Yan Gomes, he absolutely locked in. Threw a slider, got a called strike, then threw another slider low and away, and it was a really nice slider that had a nice break, exactly where you want it. Gomes fouls it off, and then Kopech was like, well, I just got a nice result on that. Let's throw the same exact pitch. It was nasty, looked like a 2021 Kopech slider, had really nice movement, and got a nice whiff from Yan Gomes, and it was a nice three-pitch at bat. And then the other ones were really difficult. But the one that really then stuck out too was Matt Shaw. The first at bat in the second inning, it was a fastball up and in, got a whiff on it. It probably would have been a ball if he didn't swing in it, but it was just like truly not like a miss. Like it was an up and in competitive pitch, and Shaw swung and missed at it. Then it was a fastball low middle that was called for a strike. And then instead of trying to go for the wipeout pitch, instead of trying to go for the strikeout, he throws a slider that was in the zone, low and away. Shaw, weak contact to DeYoung, an easy put out at first. So there were really some great moments, some ugly moments, a lot of tape to go over with Brian Bannister. But if he's able to lock in and not let it go away, when he was competitive in the zone with his fastball, it was a lot of whiffs and a lot of late swings. That is why he is a starter. That is why he'll get the chance, if healthy, to make 30 starts, 180 innings. He has a true elite fastball that not a lot of starters have. And while he doesn't have that true 180 inning plateau that he's hit before, he's reached 120. Like he's Garrett Crochet, who we're, you know, goo-gooing and gaga-ing over the 100 mile per hour fastball. You got Shohei Ohtani looking at, he's never thrown more than 60 innings in a season. Like Kopech is the true potential ace of this team if they trade away Dylan Cease, which is very likely.
Yeah, and I love that at bat with Shaw. I know he's like a rookie, a big-time prospect for the Cubs, but he didn't, as you said, he didn't try to strike him out, which are just, you know, so many times you get to two strikes, and Michael Kopech specifically, he's trying not to get hit, or he's trying to do a put-away pitch. That pitch was just in the plate, hit it if you can, and he did. He warm-burned it to DeJong, and so that's what we should be looking for from this year from Michael Kopech, turning those pitches where it would have been a walk or a prolonged at bat where you're throwing more pitches on 1-2 than you need to. I think he did that in a couple of these at bats where he got a guy down 0-2 and then he's trying to search for the put away pitch. That one, he's like, all right, kid, hit the ball where you need to hit the ball, and all you're going to do is hit the ball to one of my infielders. Now, if you can strike a dude out, you can strike him out. But if you don't have it, sometimes just induce that ground ball and let your people behind you work out instead of and there was nothing really in the air today either by the Cubs. So that was really good to see, because you've seen Michael Kopech give up a ton of home runs last year too.
Yeah, well, the only thing that was in the air was Suzuki cutter. It was the only one that got hit. It was in the outside part of the plate, and it was fouled off, and it was hit a mile, but it was well fouled. So
another one of the takeaways from spring, just from talking with folks and certainly people who watched the Kopech interview that you guys played on Monday will realize this. It seems like Brian Bannister's message to Michael was just keep it simple. Because Kopech was describing the situation of sometimes the competitive juices get flowing so much, and this is part of the mental side of the game, part of the emotional side of the game. It's not always just, oh, he's mad on the mound kind of thing. It is the chess match maybe overwhelms a little bit, and you're trying to compete so much, you're trying to do stuff that you can't do or you can't do well. And Brian Bannister's message basically to everybody, but certainly Michael applies as well, is just do the thing that you do really good. Just keep doing that. Have confidence in it and go out there and do it. Don't try to get outside of yourself. Martin Maldonado, talking about Michael Kopech, used my favorite quote of the spring, which was, you don't have to be super nasty to be nasty. And, you know, these pitchers are always looking for that edge, trying to make that ball move in a way that it's never moved before. Just go out there and pitch. And if that can be mastered, he's going to be the guy that you're describing, Sean. And I think that, you know, you were going through those at-bats, going through certainly that first one there where the pitches were off. He was probably trying so hard to make it go a certain way and it wasn't working. Just throw the ball and you're gonna do it because you are so naturally talented. And we know, I don't have to say it, but we know he's got all the ability in the world. And it's just about figuring it out and making sure you can do it on a consistent basis. And also figuring it out from batter to batter, right? Because like I was saying earlier, you walk a guy, guess what? Get it out of your mind and go get that guy out. Then go get the next guy out. Then go get the next guy out. That's what Dylan Cease is really good at. And if Michael Kopech figures that out, he'll be that guy.
Well, and it feels like aiming too. Like that first batter with Madrigal, those first three pitches, it feels like, okay, I can't be missing arm side up and in, right? I got to throw this strike at the top of the zone. I'm going to throw it right down the middle. I'm going to aim it. And then you miss it. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to be precise on the second one. And then you miss it. And then I'm going to be precise on the third one. And then that first pitch to Matt Shaw, he gets the inning to think on it in the dugout. He gets to clear his head. And he does throw one of just those natural fastballs where his release point was perfect, on point, and it was high up in the zone, exactly where you needed to be. But it was just low enough where it was, you know, Shaw wasn't able to lay off of it, but it was high enough where, you know, it's likely a ball if you don't get called, but it's just nasty.
Yeah, and all
it's just naturally nasty, right?
Hit the ball way up in the air,
right?
If he does get a piece of it,
or break his bat because it's just, you know, cutting into a righty, like it's disgusting. And if he just can go out there and be like, all right, I'm just gonna throw and maybe not aim, maybe he'll finally get those results. All right, let's jump into the position battle, one of the few actual player position battles that we have. Mike Moustakas versus Gavin Sheets. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's texting their buddies. The group chats are blowing
really
up. No.
I don't know what group chats you're a part of.
Again, none of them are blowing up. But what do we make of Gav versus Mike Moustakas? Does anyone have a leg up? Is it Gavin after, you know, going after Mike Moustakas' former team with two homers?
I mean, the results are Gavin, but I think being a veteran at Mike Moustakas is, I think maybe he would have the leg up because the people know him. I'm already thinking about that March press conference, like, oh, well, Moose has run into a couple, and Gav has options, so he can go down to the minor leagues, and you have Mike Moustakas on the team. For my liking, even though I have said that Gavin Sheets shouldn't be on this team, in a real world, I would want 27-year-old Gavin Sheets to be getting those at-bats more than 35-year-old Mike Moustakas. I mean, both of them hopefully will not be getting extensive playing time unless they're just different from what they were last year and they're just really good. But I think at the end of the day, and when we're talking about this at the end of the month, we're like, Mike Moustakas made the team and Gavin has another option left. So it was an easy move for the White Sox to do, especially because he's a veteran leader. They know his work, and he can filter down to the other team. And he could probably handle that role a little bit better than Gavin has, because Gavin has pretty much done that role the last couple years where he's just the lefty bat off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a good chance it'll play out that way. I do think there is something to the idea of, hey, if Mike Moustakas looks bad in spring training, and I don't mean looks bad from a us watching it on TV standpoint. I mean, looks bad to Pedro and to the coaches and to the front office. Then what are you doing having him there over a guy like Gavin Sheets, who apparently did a lot of work this offseason, apparently is feeling a lot better from a baseball playing standpoint, and also doesn't have to go out and play right field this year, which he has had to do the last two seasons. But at the same time, that the roster realities are what they are, right? And to be able to say, Gavin, go down to AAA, we're going to have Moustakas as this guy, and if Mike Moustakas is awful by the end of April, you just come right back. And that seems to be a very easy thing to do. Now, granted, Moustakas, I believe, gets an pay bump if he makes the major league team. Perhaps that has something to do with it at the end of the day. We'll see. But I will say this, from being in that clubhouse during the spring, Mike Moustakas, a very positive presence. You got guys kind of gathered around him, Gavin Sheets being one of them, listening to what he, you know, the yarns he has to spin, so to speak. And obviously, as you mentioned, the familiarity with Pedro Grifol, the familiarity with Chris Getz, they know what he brings, not just to a team on the field, but in that clubhouse. And for a team that is putting a lot of emphasis on a cultural makeover to go with the whole rebuilding effort that they've got going on, it does seem that there would be some positives to bringing him aboard, even if the production is, Herb, what you expect it to be.
Well, and to be clear, too, because Kevin's asking in the chat, for right field, what about Dominic Fletcher? Not an option? Oh, boy, is he the option. Dominic Fletcher will be your right fielder, I think, to start opening day. That does seem pretty clear. This is for the left-handed bench bat.
Correct.
So it doesn't seem like there's a ton of actual position battles for the opening day starting roster or for, you know, the technical usual lineup, typical lineup. It will be Benny in left field, Luis Robert in center field, Dominic Fletcher in right field, Vaughn at first base, second base it seems to be Nicky Lopez, shortstop it seems to be Paul DeJong, third base will be Yoan Moncada, DH will be Eloy Jimenez, and catcher will be Martin Maldonado. Max Stassi, who you just heard from today, will be the bench catcher. Likely that Danny Mendick will be the bench infielder.
We'll see.
Maybe.
I think we'll talk
about that Monday.
Yeah, let's just put it this way. As I was going through those guys, whether it's Danny Mendick, Braden Shoemake, who they got in the bummer trade, and some guys that have been around, Lenin Sosa, Jose Rodriguez, none of these guys are impressive from an offensive standpoint. That's just the truth. Their recent offensive production has been not good, and I don't think anyone should expect it to be good all of a sudden coming up this year. I guess the best case you would have is that those three guys who aren't Danny Mendick are young, and perhaps they go to the minor leagues and can continue to develop. Maybe even somebody like a Shoemake gets a shot at the major league, at backing up in the major leagues and develops a little further. Mendick obviously is a little further down the line, but they're going to be there to play defense. And so that's really the answer to your question there. When you talk about Gavin Sheets, an option in right field, I can't imagine that Gavin Sheets will play much, if any, right field this year, because the whole point of going to get Dominic Fletcher, the whole point of having these guys like Kevin Pillar and Brett Phillips in camp is that they're trying to improve that defense. And so that's why I think that Moustakas and Sheets are competing for a job of coming off the bench and hitting, because they're not going to eat into Andrew Vaughn's playing time very much at first base either.
Right. And then, as you said too, Kevin Pillar being the fourth outfielder on the bench. So this is just strictly for, can you hit righties? Like this is all this job is for Gavin Sheets or Mike Moustakas. I think too, like you mentioned, the youth and all those guys going down, like Lenin Sosa, Braden Shoemake, Popeye Rodriguez. I think this is a pretty easy challenge to give Gavin. We'll give you someone to beat in camp, right? We'll make it hard for you. We'll make it tough for you. He's a good guy. He'll be able to spin yarn, I think is what you said, right? You know, he gets likes him. Pedro likes him. Mike Moustakas is going to beat out Gavin Sheets for a job. If this was Dominic Smith, a guy who is of similar age, a true lefty, a guy who has played first in right field, a guy that is hungry to make the team, you know, Mike Moustakas obviously is, you know, talking up how hungry he is to make the team. He's 36 and is bad and hasn't had like a good season in like 4 years outside of Colorado.
I'll say this about Gavin Sheets, though. Forget for a second that he hit two home runs the other day. Like, what was your opinion of Gavin Sheets when the season ended last year?
Horrible, but it was better than Mike Moustakas.
But how much? I mean, what's the biggest?
Good.
What's the big difference there? You know,
did
what I mean?
Ever bring up Mike Moustakas' name in the 1,500 offseason shows we did? No.
No, I guess my point
and
is
it
just,
would have been a funny bit because he's a former Royal and it would have annoyed you.
It would have. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, my thought was never Mike Moustakas is going to take this job from Gavin Sheets because he's washed. Like, Gavin Sheets is young and he's Larry Sheets' kid, so give him a shot. I mean, when they go to Baltimore, he's going to be great. I don't know. I mean, if like Matt Cortese saying, is Brian Ramos an option? If this was like a guy of Brian Ramos's age, or he was maybe a prospect. Obviously, these guys aren't going to get that playing time. And you'd rather have Brian Ramos in like AAA getting, you know, more plate appearances.
Brian Ramos might be the starting third baseman next year.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right. So, I mean, I don't think it was a true challenge for Gav. Like, I don't know.
You think you don't? So you think you don't think Moustakas is making the team?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I would be surprised by that just because he's bad. And, like, I think Getz could probably be like, oh, we'll let you go play in Charlotte if you want. Like, or we'll give you a minor league coaching job, just like Nicky Delmonico.
You know what I was thinking the other day?
Is it Delmonico?
Yeah. Okay. And this is no offense to either of these guys. They're both very good guys. But, like, what are the odds that I would have covered multiple Nickies? You know what I mean? As opposed to Knicks, you know?
Right. Lopez, Nicky Delmonico. Yeah, right. Any other ones?
Two Nickies.
And they're the only one Nickies in Major League Baseball history, I believe.
Is that true?
When I looked it up, it was just came.
You looked this up?
When I was looking up Nicky Lopez's thing on Baseball Reference, it came up Nicky Lopez, Nicky Delmonico.
How about that?
All right. Now I need to look this up because I do believe you, but also I don't, I guess.
I got you. Lucky for Gavin, if he does get sent down at the beginning of the year, they don't go to Baltimore until September. So September 2nd, Baltimore 3rd and 4th. So he can get his hits down there in Charlotte and then come back up here and dominate that weekend.
That's another good question for clarification from Kevin there. Sheets and Moustakas both would be primary, if they had a defensive position to speak of, primary first baseman. Certainly Sheets has been that way for a while. Moustakas, obviously, many years as the third baseman in Kansas City. I believe he played a little second base when he was in Milwaukee. When he was great when he was in Milwaukee, by the way.
Cincinnati, too.
He was not great when he was in Cincinnati. But he definitely will not be playing any second base. Pedro said, we asked him, Pedro, about that, and he's not going to be playing any second base. Again, defensive focus. This guy is, you know, of an age, and usually when those guys get to that age, they move over to first base. Moustakas might get a look or two at third base, but I wouldn't expect him to be playing any defense there, particularly when you've got a defender the caliber of Yoan Moncada there at third base.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, they'd rather see Mendick at third base than Mike Moustakas at this
point. Yeah, it would just be, that's why I'm saying it's just a different position.
Yeah,
who knows? There's the lefty bat off the bench, that's Sheets Moustakas, and then there's the fourth outfielder, which is a guy who's going to have to be able to play second, short, and third.
I'm trying to think, like, how many spots is that? 13? Is that the 9 starters, and then you got the backup catcher, then you got the backup left bat, the backup right bat,
and 13. So, okay. Yeah, it's 13 pitchers, 13 batters. Okay. So, yeah, 9 plus 4 is 13.
I know they're trying to lessen the pitchers on the roster for next year maybe, but I hope that doesn't happen because White Sox and everybody needs as many pitchers as they can get because injuries are like a motherfucker this year.
Right, too. You'd want 13 pitchers for a 3-game series, too. Yeah. Like, I don't think that would make any sense, especially with 5 of those being you know, ready for the next four games. I don't know what's wrong with Baseball Reference. You're right that Nicky Delmonico exists, but you have to say first name starts with. You can't just say, like, first name is Nicky. It has to be first name starts with, ends with. So it's N-Icky, and N-Icky only brings up Nicky Lopez. So Nicky Delmonico, we know exists.
God, I don't know.
Yes. But for some reason, he does
Delmonico
not
Nicky Delmonico erasure.
Did he never make the major leagues?
I can confirm that he's at Sox camps, guys. I can confirm that I saw
just on my thing, it just that's what it comes up, like there, just a major league
player. Just when you're typing it in. Yeah, okay. I guess that works, yeah. All matches for Nicky. Nick Williams, but that's not Nick. Oh,
another White Sox great.
Okay, yeah. But yeah. Well,
Nicky Dubs.
So here's the thing. When you look it up, it's Nicky Lopez, Nick Williams, who is Nicky Dubs, and then Nicky Two Strikes, Nicky Madrigal. So they've had every Nicky ever.
Every Nicky ever.
There was.
Go with a different name. How about that?
There was a Nicky Curtis. A Nicky Hopkins, but these were all minor leaguers. So if you've made the major leagues, you are, you know, a White Sox. Congratulations. Oh my God. Nicky Curtis played for Birmingham. This is incredible. Oh my God. What is this? Okay. I don't know where any of these teams are. Okay. We'll end the show. That's it. We'll talk more about Danny Mendick.
Various Nickies.
Yeah. Oh, we got
to
sign.
And if
Nickies.
Your name is close to Soroka or Soroka, there's a guy coming up next year in the draft named Sirota. I was like, the White Sox are drafting. His name, I think, is Mike Sirota.
I get the bit. I'm always down for the bit. I want that kid from Oregon State, Trent Bezerra or whatever
is. Oh,
second baseman lefty who's just like hitting the hell
tall?
Out of the balls. No, he's like, but he's like, I mean, he's like 6'2", maybe.
Already did the Oregon State thing.
Right, no, but is he tall? Yes, he's taller than that guy.
Okay.
He's taller than 5'6", Nick Madrigal. He's like 6'2".
But and he's got a little pop.
Power. Oh, okay. A lot of pop. He's got like 8 homers already.
Not there's like also, projected. Oh, he's short. He's a second baseman, so he's going to be like Jose Altuve or Nicky or Dustin Pedroia type of a thing.
Worked at Driveline hitting the hell out of the ball.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Different guy. There's also this kid from Georgia Tech who's a freshman, and in his first 8 games, he has 9 homers.
Nomar Garciaparra.
No.
Oh,
he's Mark Teixeira? Done something that Mark Teixeira and Nomar and all these guys have never done. 9 homers in his first 8 games. Anyways, that's going to do it. Any other thoughts? You guys want to go enjoy your weekend?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes.
That's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. White Sox Weekly comes out on Monday, so make sure that you become a diehard if you haven't yet. Man in the middle is Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at EchnerWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. Hit the like button. Thank you to Sarah for producing the show. We will talk to you on Monday. Goodbye.
We all silly like the mayor.